show to rule them all. One show to find them. One show to bring us all, and in this podcast, bind them. Hello, everybody, and welcome to official kickoff coverage of The Lord of the Rings, : The Rings of Power, a brand new Amazon series adapted from J.R. Tolkien's work, coming to Amazon Prime this fall, but coming to post-show recaps right now. My name is Mike Bloom, part of the Fellowship, to help talk about this show. And of course, tonight, at least, we'll talk more about coverage moving forward, but tonight, I'm joined by the Arwen to my Aragorn, if you will, Angela Bloom.
Oh, hello.
Yes, hi.
Far too many Lord of the Rings proper references in
this podcast. Well, I don't know much about the Second Age, so I only have so much to go off of.
Well, you're going to learn about it.
I suppose we all are.
Grab that Cimmerillion off the bookshelf behind you.
I mean, I honestly might need to. We have what, like...
You won't make it.
We have 7 months to prepare. I might be able to get, like...
You won't.
Three pages in.
Yeah, you won't make it.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
It's a tough read.
Just might need, like, a TLDR on...
You know what you can read, though, which I think could be useful, are the appendices at the end of Lord of the Rings, or in, you know, the various versions of it that I have here. Those are the appendices that Tolkien wrote himself before releasing Return of the King, and those have like a lot of Second Age stuff in them.
Yeah, so speaking of, you said the versions that we have on our current bookshelf right
so
now.
So many.
Well, for those that might not have checked out the coverage that you and
yes,
me...
Ah, yes, this was a patron-only thing.
Yeah, and though I do believe, I think our intro podcast might be up to the plebs.
To the laymans.
Yeah, out there, but we will put it in the show notes. Last year, January 2021, as part of Post Show Recaps Theater, we did a special month-long, what we refer to as January Ring, I forget what...
All right, the other one was not good, if
yeah,
I recall.
January Ring was the one that ended up sticking, yeah. But it was myself, it was Angela, it was Josh Wegler, it was Emily Fox, breaking down the Lord of the Rings films from various perspectives. The main takeaway was that Angela Bloom is far and away the most devoted fan of the Lord of the Rings that certainly I know in
yeah,
my life.
It's embarrassing, but also, I do love it.
I mean, listen, we're talking into a microphone about the subject matter. Like, it can't be that embarrassing.
I mean, there was a time that I tried to teach myself Elvish, so.
Well, we had a friend in college who actually not did, but like wrote Elvish, right? He wrote the inscription on the ring, the thing that I parodied
in
the opening stanza.
You can copy that, no prob. It's not a language.
Yeah, well, that being said, so you are a big fan of Tolkien's work.
Big fan. Started at the ripe age of, I don't know, how old are you in sixth grade?
Oh, like 11, 12.
Yeah, 11, 12, far too young to be delving into that type of novelization.
I mean,
but...
that being said, though, we'll certainly get into it. According to, you know, some comments that have been made by the showrunners, the show we're about to talk about is partially at least made for, like, the 11 and 12-year-olds out there. So...
Yeah, they're not making it for, like... you know, they're making it for everyone is what they're saying, but
yeah, and it is referring to, again, this ubiquitous Lord of the Rings series, which has been in the works for
long time.
I mean, like, listen, basically, like, an Elven's age has passed. It feels like we're in the Second Age itself.
Well, yeah, so they sold the rights to the Second Age, basically.
Yeah, so this
in
happened
in 2017.
Yeah, 2017, right? It was a big, very different world. A big announcement about how Amazon had required essentially the rights to produce a Lord of the Rings series, and then over the course of the next 5 years, we had very tiny, infinitesimally small drips and drabs of information. Right now, I would say it's more like akin to a running faucet, where we haven't experienced like a tidal wave yet, right? Like, there's no horses in the water coming at us.
But
like,
I would say right now, it's like a typical release of content, whereas you usually don't hear about this kind of stuff 5-6 years in advance. You usually hear about it like a year in advance, and you're like, oh, that's awesome that they made that, and like, unless you're like deep in the Reddit threads.
Yeah,
but...
Well, I mean, one of the big to-dos is that at this point, this is the most expensive show that has ever been produced. I believe reportedly the first season cost $462 million.
Well, they basically quoted it saying it's going to be upwards of $1.5 billion for them to make all five seasons. But
that's just a dent in Jeff Bezos'
pocket.
That's
exactly
right.
Let's be
completely honest.
He is a noted Tolkien fan. Loves
Loves that Gollum guy.
Probably
sympathizes with him.
No, but apparently this is the big reason that it's even happening, is that Jeff Bezos is a big fan and he wanted an Amazon Game of Thrones. Like, he wanted like a fantasy epic on Amazon, mm-hmm. and he went after it.
And I mean, technically Wheel of Time did come first, so this is not exactly...
No, but he wanted something like, you know, I think that it's different to produce something like this that has a big...
I mean, yeah, an Oscar-winning
yeah,
following.
Pre-existing canon, like Wheel of Time, yes, amazing novels, all of that, but it is a little bit more niche.
Mm-hmm. So we are going to be talking about, basically, at the point we're speaking tonight, the first trailer for the series has dropped. It's culminated in, again, like the faucet was turned on mm-hmm. proverbially this past week, notably from a very big expose done on the show in Vanity Fair. So I would say coming into this week, we didn't know as much. You know, they were really teasing us with things like character portraits, but the character portraits were of the characters' midsections.
Yes, and then they teased us a few weeks ago with how they made the opening credits,
right,
which was very cool, actually.
Yeah, which is like the title, and it was like the title announcement video, which we'll certainly get into the title, but like it was basically, you know, like forging metal through a river almost to spell out the name of the show. And you showed me that there was a making of video that showed that it was entirely
practical. Yeah. I mean, there are obviously special effects probably layered on top of that, but it is primarily a practical thing where they forged a huge giant table of the letters and then like poured molten liquid through them and then splashed water on them and all of that sort of stuff.
So all that being said, we figured, okay, this is like the first glimpse of actual footage of this series tonight. Let's use this as an excuse to talk about everything we know about the series so far. So that is going to include discussion and speculation on the title, on the cast and characters that we've been introduced to. We'll talk about the setting. We'll talk about the possible plot. We'll talk about some of that stuff from that Super Bowl footage. Though I will say, if you had read the Vanity Fair article, which we'll link to, honestly, you're not missing much if you don't watch the trailer.
Most of the images that they show in the Vanity Fair article are there. Most of the like content that you're going to see is there. Like,
there are no new revelations. It's not like Gandalf shows up at the end. No. You're like, oh, I didn't realize Gandalf was in this. No.
But it is nice because you get to see like you're back in it from a perspective of like fighting and arrows.
Oh,
and
yeah. There's
beautiful landscapes.
Battles going on. There's incredible vistas. There's fun CGI monsters.
Yeah. And so where was this filmed?
So this was filmed in New Zealand.
Yes, correct.
And they actually tell a story.
Just
in the
testing.
Oh, thank you. Do I earn anything?
Yeah, I don't know.
All right. Well, we'll figure out the prize money later. They actually talk about in the Vanity Fair article, right, how they were working on one of these scenes, which is actually shown in the Super Bowl trailer of Galadriel. And I'm trying to remember. We're going to get so
Hema,
many.
Hema something?
Yeah, it's a.
He's a character that's not.
He's a newbie.
He's a new guy.
Yes, his character's name begins with an H, and he has his own little like side plot of escaping his faith. Hallbrand, Charlie Vickers as Hallbrand, a human.
He's not Hamahama.
A human running from his past, whose destiny is in tribe with Galadriel's. But
yeah, get more vague, please.
That scene of them on this big like raft at sea, they had received news of like Tom Hanks, you know, contracting COVID
and the NBA
shutting down. So again, this is, you know, beginning of 2020, they were really working on this.
It was March.
But they were able to finalize everything. They got everything in the can, at least for the first season. And here it is. And we are here to basically talk about everything we know so far, which, to your point, it's odd that we almost, I know that for a while we were sort of like, you know, wringing our hands of like, oh my God, they just revealed who was cast in it, but they didn't reveal who the characters were. Sometimes the actors didn't even know who they were playing. But again, 7 days ago, we would have been able to say that. Now, we have a good amount of information for a show that, to your point, is still 7 months away.
Yeah, which I think is, I mean, for something of this magnitude, they're putting the hype out there. And I think they're just going to continue to like drop little nuggets here and there. But this is like the first, you know, they have to have some sort of like amp up time, you know?
All right. So let's talk about this series. September 2nd, it is coming to Amazon Prime. Yeah. Let's start with the title. The Lord of the Rings: The Rings of Power.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
I'm fine with it. Is it, are we not fine with it?
No, I mean, there's been some, yeah, I mean, there's been some discourse in the Post Show Recaps patron Discord, which you can become a member of if you have the means to do so at postshowrecaps.com/patron. There is a very fun Lord of the Rings channel that has been around since we did January Ring.
Clearly, I have not been in the Discord, and I am so sorry.
Which is, I mean, it's just been usually a repository for memes until information actually came out, yeah. But I saw a fairly negative response for it. I think some people were not fans of using, like, the Lord of the Rings prefix, yeah, necessarily.
But what are they going to do? I mean, I think that it's something that you have to think about from, like, of course, it would be ideal if it was just called Rings of Power, but then you're missing out on a huge portion of people who are probably just going to watch this because it's called Lord of the Rings and they maybe have seen one or two of the Lord of the Rings movies.
But I guess to that point, should they have done, like, the Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit?
Maybe?
Because I think the issue is that...
No, I know. But it's a TV show. It's much different.
Yeah, I think the point that some people are taking is that, like, the Lord of the Rings is the brand name, but for all intents and purposes, it really doesn't have to do much with this particular thing, right? Because, like, the Rings of Power, yeah, obviously, this is going to... And we'll talk about the setting of the Second Age. Like, it refers to the rings being made and everything, but at the same time, like, the Lord of the Rings feels almost specific to that Third Age period.
No. Yeah. The Lord of the Rings is Sauron, and he is still part of the Second Age.
I guess that's a good point. Yeah. And we'll certainly talk about that. I think people just felt like
I get it.
It was an awkward way, and they felt maybe the Rings of Power was maybe too chintzy of a title.
My only issue, I didn't feel any sort of way about it in that regard, but my only issue is that, like, when you name something the Rings of Power, that kind of puts a pretty pretty tight seal on what you're going to be covering.
That's
and like
very true, yeah.
When you get to that point when the rings are forged, then it's like, okay.
Yeah.
We did it.
No, it's an interesting point. Obviously, I would imagine
it's probably very well mapped out.
Yeah,
but...
well, it's a good question, though, because I know that obviously this is an investment and ideally they'd want to, you know, cover multiple seasons. And to your point, I wonder when they're going to get there, right? Is this going to be one of these shows that we're like, oh, we're not really doing that much plot-wise? Or is it going to be something where we're just like buck wild all over the place and then we end up, you know, with the rings being forged at the end of season one?
I mean, maybe. And if that's the case, I'd actually be happy with that, because I do feel like with something called the Rings of Power, if you're not getting to it right away, then all we're doing is waiting for that to happen.
Right, exactly.
And you know it's coming because it's like there is some historical context. So if you really want to play in the space, so to speak, you probably should get it over with sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Would the Lord of the Rings colon the Second Age, would that have been too generic?
A little too on the nose.
Yeah, so maybe, I don't know, something more, I don't know. If anyone has any ideas of, like, possible other subtitles or titles in general that they should have used. It's also odd to do, like, Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, right? Like, a little repetitive.
It is a little repetitive, but you know what? I think they're going for, this is the Lord of the Rings. Like, even, you know, with The Hobbit, it's much different because that's, like, a big movie franchise.
Yeah.
And it's much easier to, like, tell people, like, oh, this is a Lord of the Rings thing.
Yeah.
Whereas... with this, if you're going to put it out on Amazon and people are like not necessarily looking for it, they may not see it if you don't call it the Lord of the Rings. You know what I mean?
Well, let's talk about love or hate the title or feel sort of fine about it like Angela does. Let's talk about the setting for the Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power. Now, of course, we're still on Middle Earth. We're not going anywhere. We're still hanging out with our friends, the elves, the dwarves.
We are going
humans.
A little further out, I think, than the Middle Earth proper.
What do you mean?
We're going to Numenor.
I was gonna say it's like outer space. What are you?
No,
talking
it's like
about?
An island. It's like
yeah,
off the coast.
We're staying on a planet.
Yeah, we're going on the same planet.
We're not in another
yeah.
world, but we are back in time. Cue Huey Lewis and the News and his little Bardy band. Yeah, we are. As we mentioned before, this series is taking place in what's known as the Second Age of Middle Earth. Now, for the uninitiated, Angela, can you explain what exactly that means?
Yeah, so there is, everybody who has seen Lord of the Rings or read Lord of the Rings know that everything that takes place in that is the Third Age. So the Adventures of Frodo and like all of that happens in the Third Age. This is thousands of years in the past because that happens after. And so this is the Second Age is technically known as a time of peace for Middle Earth, because the First Age is all about the wicked god Morgoth and his defeat, and think of him as like a Sauron, but like a, he's a bad guy.
Yeah, wasn't a Sauron sort of like his, I don't know, apprentice in a way?
Yeah. And so the first age is all about that, and whatever, we don't need to dive into that. But the second age is basically a preface to the third age, but it's, you know, it's a time of peace, and it's kind of like picking up the pieces after this battle. And he, you know, with Morgoth, and then Sauron, his apprentice, has vanished. And so the hope is that things are, you know, happy and good to go.
Right. But again, if you've read or seen The Lord of the Rings, you know that this is more so the calm before the storm.
Well, that, and also I think that what we've, you know, discussed previously in our Lord of the Rings coverage is that it is all about the individuals rather than the big picture sometimes. And I think that's how this TV show is going to go, because, I mean, I think the big name to dive into first is Galadriel.
Yeah, so we can certainly talk about the cast that, again, this taking place thousands of years in the past, Bilbo Baggins isn't hanging around, you know?
No.
Aragorn isn't kicking it back with Gimli or anything. Those characters have yet to be born, but due to the extended
lifespan
of elves, those are popping up. I mean, we heard this certainly from people like Elrond as
yes.
well, right? That like he was there, you know, at the fall of man, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. That there is going to be sort of like prequel versions, if you will, of some very notable characters, starting with Galadriel.
Yeah.
And happy to know that we have now like names two faces as well.
Yes.
Again, those character portraits left a lot to the imagination, but this article from Vanity Fair was able to match up a lot. Morfydd Clark plays Galadriel, a very different looking Galadriel than
yeah.
what we are used to from Cate Blanchett.
Yeah, and I will say that there are some images that have been released where they do show her in the long elven garb and Elrond next to her. But most of the images are showing her in her battle gear, because she is coming into what we imagine to be this scenario as kind of a scorned, you know, fighter.
Mm-hmm.
She lost her brother to Sauron, and so she's like, She's got some hunting to do.
Right, exactly. Like, she is, her goal, at least initially, seems to be that she's kind of, I don't know, picking up scraps in a manner of speaking.
Yeah, she's vengeful. So, yes, it's all over, but not for her, because they killed her brother, and anyone that's tied to them, she's after them. So,
yeah, and I would also imagine that that will probably correlate to her probably finding out some source of information,
yes.
right, that Sauron is not necessarily gone or forgotten.
Yeah, because I think that was one of the things that the Vanity Fair article talked about, was like, what's the point of this show? And it's that,
yeah.
like, things are looming that Galadriel is going to be the first one to kind of point to.
Right. Let's talk about Elrond for a second.
We don't have much on him.
Yeah, played by Robert Aramayo. He looks like a little hunk. He does not have, like, he's more of a blonde than a brunette that we're used to from Hugo Weaving. He has not taken on the a-hole, you know, paternal tendencies.
No,
like,
but
he does.
His face is very Hugo Weaving.
Yes.
If you see, like, the front of his
face in one of those photos. Why didn't they get Jonathan Groff, just like they got him for the Matrix movie?
No, but his face is very angular. He's got, like, a really high square forehead, just like Hugo Weaving. Like, you could for 100% say they were brothers.
But at this point, Elrond is not in the position that we find him during the Third Age. They describe him as an ambitious, up-and-coming politician and architect.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he's going to design Rivendell?
Maybe.
That'd be interesting if he like designs the buildings that he has the council at or anything. But yeah, we're essentially going to, I think, see his own sort of rise to power in a manner of speaking, probably working alongside Galadriel. To your point, there's a couple of pictures of them together. So it seems like they at least knew of each other, or maybe they're meeting for the first time in the show.
Well, I don't think at this point, it's not like they're brand new either. So they've been around for a while, even up until this point. You know,
yeah.
they just went through an entire, like, basically Lord of the Rings-esque, you know, trials and tribulations. And now they're going to do it again in a couple thousand years. But it's not their first rodeo either.
The other on-screen character that is being adapted for this is a big one, not as seen visually in the Lord of the Rings series as much as Galadriel or Elrond, but pivotal to the plot. Let's talk about Isildur. Is that
mm-hmm.
how you pronounce his name?
Isildur.
Yes, so this was the previous owner, or one of the previous owners, of the One Ring of Power. He was a king. He's not the king at this point, but he is going to become someone who very pivotally chops off Sauron's little pointer finger.
He's basically the leader of man at the point we see him in the beginning of The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, where Hugo Weaving is telling us all about what happened, and or Galadriel's telling us all about what happened.
Yeah, Sauron's going to recap it later.
Yeah, they both are like, this is this guy. He was King of Gondor, basically, which was like the center of everything.
Yeah,
for
Aragorn's like great
yes.
granddaddy.
He, and so you'll hear it in Lord of the Rings. He'll say, Isildur's heir.
Right.
They say it a lot. And it's like, he basically is like a huge bummer because I imagine we're going to grow to like this guy a lot.
Yeah.
Knowing that he's going to just really screw the pooch at the end of the,
basically
the fight with Sauron.
Yeah, basically what happens is he cuts off the finger. They're at Mount Doom and he can chuck it right there. Elrond was there. He yelled at him to cast it into the fire, and Isildur decides not to. The temptation is too powerful, and thus begins the circulation of the One Ring that leads to the devastation that happens in The Lord of the Rings. But to your point, you know, his origin story is going to be very interesting because it says he's a sailor at this point. I'm really intrigued to see how this ends up accelerating to this point.
Well, the cool thing about what this show is kind of portraying to us is that a lot of these characters are existing in a bit of like a pastoral setting. You know, that we have, you know, Elrond and Galadriel obviously are going to go to Lindon, which is like a basically another elven kingdom, but and you're gonna probably see a lot of that stuff as well. But there are a lot of characters that like we don't know, never heard of, that they're putting in these like outskirt villages, and we're, you know, it's gonna be a little bit more soapy, I think, as far as like, you know, I think there's a couple characters who are, you know, sort of quoted as having a forbidden love or whatever, an elf and a human. And then, you know, we're also told that there are going to be hobbits, but they're not technically hobbits.
Yeah,
they're called Harfoots.
Yeah, Harfoots, which are like, I guess ancestors or like maybe.
No, they're hobbits, but they're what hobbits, they're just not called that yet.
Right, and this was a little bit of a weird thing because, you know, the historical quote-unquote story on hobbits is basically until Bilbo Baggins, like, hobbits didn't do shit when it came to...
Yeah, nobody knew who they were, and that's how they liked it.
Yeah, exactly. So
I imagine we're going to see some of them in this, like, Harfoot way, but they're not going to be significant at all.
But it's tough, though, because everyone loves Frodo, Bilbo, you know,
hobbits
Sam
are the center of the story.
And so they're like, how do we put that in there? We should also mention here as well that the showrunners for The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, are Patrick McKay and J.D. Payne. I am really intrigued by this because allegedly this is like their first IMDb credit, period.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I guess the big reason that they were picked for this is because J.J. Abrams endorsed them, and that was like...
Get that Abrams bump, baby.
I mean, yeah, if you can't get him, I guess, you know, find somebody that can mimic him. I don't know, but I mean, they seem great.
Yeah, it's just interesting that, like, again, such a big thing that they put it in the hands. And I think the story that Amazon also says, right, is like they like their vision the best. And it's a fun idea, right?
That it's like when you have a pitch for, you know, like a new marketing agency, and all the marketing agencies are coming in and pitching you their idea, and these two guys had the best idea.
Yeah, and so I
like
that.
And then they found them like 500 people that would support them. Like, I guess there's also the Game of Thrones co-executive producer Brian Cogman, I guess, is advising. Also the guy who helped film Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. So they have a lot of people who are like epic showrunners, writers, producers, like supporting them, quote unquote.
I just think it's cool. I think in a day and age where I think the discourse is sort of like, you know, move over fuddy-duddy men that have been directing all these before, like, let's leave some room for some new talent. It's a cool thing that they entrusted, again, the most expensive television show ever produced to like these two incredibly new people.
But I do also think you want to make a chance with that as well, so that it doesn't become like a rote situation. Like, you don't want to hire somebody who was the writer and showrunner of Game of Thrones.
Nope, because, definitely not.
Well, because then it's Game of Thrones 2.0, and you don't want to do the same thing for, you know, something that is also going to come out probably in the near future as well. There's the Game of Thrones prequels.
House of the Dragon actually is probably coming out, I would imagine, before the Rings of Power. We should also mention here, by the way, speaking of Game of Thrones, because there was, in the years and years of conversation around this, there was some concern as to, and you and I talk about The Witcher, so we speak about this a bit as well, right? This idea of, okay, in order for fantasy to succeed nowadays, it has to be graphic, there has to be nudity, community. It caused a big stir in the community when there was like news that an intimacy coordinator, I think, was hired, which is basically like someone that can coach you through sex scenes. But as mentioned before, the showrunners have said essentially that
this isn't Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it's made for 11, 12, 13-year-olds, basically saying like there might be a couple times where they have to pull up the covers because something scary might happen, but otherwise, like, you're not seeing bare boob in The Rings of Power.
This isn't porn. This isn't like soft porn Game of Thrones style, but I do think that they're, you know, of course, it's a television show. There's romance. There, you know, they did all of that in The Lord of the Rings, too, when it's not really part of the books.
Right.
You know, the big romance in The Lord of the Rings novels are Sam and Frodo. You know, like, that's it. You know, then that's like that's platonic love, you know, and I think that that's the best thing that people love about Lord of the Rings is that it is, yes, it's all these, like, dramatic, like, political sort of landscapes of, you know, who's gonna win, who's not gonna win, wars, all of that, but at the end of the day, it's about, like, friendship and, you know, coming together and optimism and all of that sort of stuff. So I think that that's good that they're gonna hone in on that and not have any, like, Game of Thrones-esque, I don't know, rape scenes or something.
We're not gonna have, like, a Nazgul bite someone's dick off or something.
No, I kind of want to see that.
Oh boy, well, I'll draw that up for you later. Let's go through some other characters here. Now, this is like the first stage where, again, the characters that were seen in the Lord of the Rings movies that are being adapted for this. Let's get into some book-only characters. So, again, these are characters who have existed in the canon, did not appear in the movies, but are now going to appear in the Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power. The Dwarven Prince. We're focusing a bit on the dwarves.
Which I am super pumped for, because I will say it's real tough to grasp what they're going for in Lord of the Rings proper.
Yeah. What's
with
tough?
Minas Tirith and, not Minas Tirith, with
Khazad-dûm. The Mines of Moria.
The Mines of Moria. And, like, it's hard to grasp, like, the grandeur there when all you have is Gimli being like, this is my, like...
Yeah, where he comes in like, no!
Yeah, like, what happened?
We're all dead!
Yeah, and realistically, like, yes, it looks like it's like, yeah, they're all dead. It's like a genocide of his people, and like, you don't really get that. You just think it's like a crypt. Whereas I'm glad we're gonna kind of delve into it.
Yeah, and we are getting to like the glory days of Khazad-dûm, right? Yeah. That's where it's going to take place. But we're gonna be meeting the Dwarven Prince, Durin the Fourth,
yes,
played by Owain Arthur. There's also the big character that I think people are very excited to be introduced to is Celebrimbor. Is that how you say his name? Again, I haven't heard it, so I'm just sort of reading phonetically here.
Yes, he's like a blacksmith, basically, but an elven smith.
Well, played by Charles Edwards, but he plays obviously a pivotal role because he makes said rings of power.
But he's also somebody who like makes a lot of things, you know, like similar to what we see in Lord of the Rings, like with Sting and like all of the... He basically is able to create magical sort of mystical elemental things out of, you know, whatever the mines are being dug for.
Okay, so you think
he's elven?
Yeah, but I was gonna say, well, I would imagine that he's not hanging out in Khazad-dûm, considering that the elven dwarf thing I'm imagining is still pretty rifty at
this point. Yeah, but he is. I mean, there are you know, the dwarves are creating things and the elves are creating things. Like, they're not just getting the materials from nowhere, you know, like they have to get them from somewhere.
Yeah, so we should also say, as we're moving now into our brand new characters, which I guess I should say first off, this seems to be, I think, one of the more divisive points with any adaptation, the idea of like adding new characters, or sometimes like shifting storylines onto those characters instead of other ones. Do you have any general feeling when it comes to adding characters to adaptations?
No, I think that it in a something like this, I don't, because it is such a vague piece of literature to be pulling from. Mm-hmm. Like, the Silmarillion and the appendices, like, it's just historical. Like, unless you're going to make a documentary about Middle Earth and the Second Age, like, you have to add stuff. Whereas when they did it in the Lord of the Rings movies, it was challenging because there were characters that were left out.
Tom Bombadil.
Yes. To name a few, to name someone particular. Yes. And then there were things like, we spoke about this before we got on the air tonight, but how Arwen is the one to save Frodo instead of the elven character who is just cut from the movies, you know? And so there's stuff like that. That's not a big deal, but it's also like kind of sits in the back of your mind. Like, oh, it'd be great if we explored that character too, but you can't have everybody. And you need, Arwen has literally three pages in the Lord of the Rings. And then she shows up at the end and she's like, I'll marry you. And blah, 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 blah. You know? So it's nice to have a, you know, let's like have some more female archetypes within a very male-driven
book
series.
Well, also, just the call for diversity in general is great. You know, as you speak about, like, Sofia Nomvete as Disa, who's a princess of Khazad Dûm.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm assuming married to Durin, perhaps? Considering that he's the prince, might be a brother-sister thing. I'm not entirely sure. But she's the first dwarven woman we are seeing on screen. Also the first dwarf of color we are seeing on screen. You know, especially the characters that have been created newly for the show. They really went colorblind on that. And obviously, internet's gonna internet. Trolls are gonna troll, in a manner of speaking, in true Lord of the Rings fashion, and people were, you know, railing against it. But I believe one of the showrunners was quoted in saying, "Tolkien is for everyone. His stories are about his fictional races doing their best work when they leave the isolation of their own cultures and come together." And yeah, I mean, hashtag Middle Earth So White was definitely something glaring from when we watched last year. And so listen, if you have the opportunity to make a property nowadays, absolutely take advantage of it.
Yeah, and I think that even Peter Jackson is quoted in saying in like, you know, more recent stuff that he, you know, does regret a little bit the casting choices to make things so whitewashed and blah, blah, blah. But that's not even to say that it's, I just don't get why people would be so up in arms about something that's like not real. Like, who cares?
I mean,
elves
again,
can be whatever color.
It's 2022. People getting uptight about things that aren't real is pretty much what is in our blood at this
point.
Yeah,
and I think there was a quote in the Vanity Fair article that I highlighted, and it's a token scholar named Mariana Rios Maldonado. But she said, obviously there's going to be push and backlash, but the question is from whom? Who are these people that feel so threatened or disgusted by the idea that an elf is black or Latino or Asian? And it's like, yeah, who are these people?
It's an incredible question of which we do not know the answer, and frankly, I don't want to find out.
Well, and that's the thing, is like, hardcore fans will actually see it as a representation of what Tolkien was trying to achieve,
right,
generally, which, like you said, yeah, is a message of unity.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of these new characters. Now, I would say the big to-do, we spoke about, again, Hallbrand, who seems to be like, I don't know, I don't want to say like Aragorn-esque, but like someone who kind of has his own little thing that he's dealing with.
I mean, he's got the Aragorn vibe from an aesthetic perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's going to run into Galadriel. So again, he might be involved with elves in a manner of speaking. And that can always be tough, especially if Elrond gets involved again. But the big to-do, you mentioned the star-crossed lovers, right? And it seems like one of the things that we're really focusing on is a romance between two characters, speaking of humans and elves. So first, we have Ismael Cruz Cordova as Arondir, who is an elf. There's actually a really cool shot in the trailer of him. Mm-hmm. There's an arrow being fired at him. He grabs it out of midair, spins around, puts it in his bow, and fires it back.
Yeah, this is very like what they tried to achieve with Legolas.
Riding the shield down the stairs.
Sliding
down the elephant's trunk.
It's that scene where the wargs are attacking and he pulls himself onto the horse by like basically flipping around front, and it's just like my sexual awakening.
Well, listen, if he's at least a smidge more entertaining than Legolas, I'll consider that a moral victory.
How dare you?
Yeah. Go back to our coverage to talk about how much I dislike Legolas as a
character. And I am disgusted.
It's a conflict in our household. But speaking of conflict, his forbidden love is Bronwyn, played by Nazanin Boniadi, who is like a single mother and a healer who owns an apothecary. But the emphasis is she human,
yeah. So I guess this is like going to be part of the quote-unquote politics of the show, which is like this forbidden love. Is it because she's human? Is it because she's, you know, it's like, I imagine it's an elf-human situation, like crossbreeding not allowed.
Yeah, it's just so interesting because I guess my larger question, the other sort of thing that's left over from the casting, we spoke about the Harfoots before, but we have Markella Cavanaugh, Megan Richards, and Lenny Henry are all playing Harfoots. It seems like from the Vanity Fair article, two of these Harfoots are going to run into like quote-unquote a mysterious lost man. So it looks like there might be a stranger that they befriend. Might be like, you know, the Sauron in disguise, essentially, because it's before he becomes completely perverted by the powers of everything. I guess my big question is, you know, how separated are we going to be here? You know, like, is there going to be a unifying event that brings all of these together? Or really, is it just going to be, again,
little vignettes?
Yeah, to go back to the Game of Thrones style of it all, like, are we going to be scattered to the four corners of Middle Earth and just, like, spend time with these characters that never intersect with
each
other?
Well, I think that's how it's going to start. I imagine there'll be some kind of cohesiveness when it comes to the Rings of Power, because they all go to the dwarves, the men, the elves. You know, it's like, that's how it's split up. So I imagine they'll come together in that regard at some point.
Yeah, I wonder if Hallbrand is, again, maybe almost an Aragorn type in that he is, I don't know, escaping his own, you know, position.
Destiny.
Where he was going to get
a ring.
I would
actually like it better if he was just a ranger, though.
I was going to say, how many rings? I think the men got 9 rings, did they?
Yeah, well, and yeah, I don't know how much we're going to get into the weeds on that right away anyway.
No. That'd be interesting, though. That'd be, again, an interesting thing to play. It's almost like media res, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, okay, these certain things will happen. Who's going to fill the slots?
Well,
and
that's
who gets
why that was my big complaint about it being called the Rings of Power. Like, we have to get there.
Yeah, so that's all we really know at this point. I believe 22 actors are in the main cast of The Rings of Power.
I think in the article we were talking about as well, they talk about, like, how do you manage 22 main characters and then, you know, even make anything happen. So we're going to be bouncing around a bit.
Yeah, so speaking of bouncing around a bit, that's going to do it for what we know so far about the Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power. I'll admit, you know, again, I had no idea just what to think about it, you know, when we were coming into the concept, but I was talking with Josh Wegler about this offline. After reading the Vanity Fair article, my interest is positively piqued.
That's great. Get on board.
Yeah.
Hop on this riverboat.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully we're not getting caught in a storm. But yeah, I think it's just for me, like, once I actually found out more information about what it is involving, that it's not, while there are characters that are connected, it's not going to be like, this is how Galadriel found out everything, that there is more of a focus on new characters.
Well, and some new development of the characters too, because I think that, like, we know Elrond, we know Galadriel as these almost like godlike beings.
Yeah, as the people that will appear in like the weird gauzy thing, right, when Frodo's passed out and there's that weird shot of Elrond's really close-up face.
Yeah, but I think also just from a perspective of being more of a like a demigod, like all-knowing, powerful,
OP,
like,
yeah,
like mage type person, whereas this is the real people. You know, I hope that we'll get a little bit more like reality with the Galadriel character specifically, because yes, Cate Blanchett, amazing, but again, there just wasn't context, because it's like you can't put everything into a, you know, 3-hour movie times 3.
And that's the thing, is why I personally love television as a medium, perhaps over film, is just the idea of being able to sit and spend time and learn about characters. So I agree. I think, you know, they're going to devote a lot of time to exploring all of these characters, to exploring part of this world. And while I have
part of this world,
are there mermaids in Middle Earth?
No.
I would imagine not, right? Like no naiads or anything.
No, it's not the right genre.
Yeah. Well, I also feel like we don't do a lot of like maritime work anyway. Though again, Isildur is a sailor.
Maritime
so, like,
work. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, like we were talking about, there's Numenor, which is basically, I think they talk about it in the Van Fair article. They don't really delve into it, but it's like this Atlantis type city.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about it in Lord of the Rings. They call it the Fall of Numenor, which is like where Sauron and his buddy Morgoth are defeated.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we have a lot of fun locations to explore.
And new locations too, which I like.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're not going to see Rohan, you're not going to see Gondor, if anything, you're going to see like the prototypes of them.
Because
like one of the character portraits does have someone holding a sword that has a horse head on its hilt, but I have a feeling this is, again, pre-Rohan. We're not going to see like, you know, maybe we'll see the founding of it, but...
Well, and it's the age of man is the third age. You know, that is what we're going. Well, the fourth age is the age of man. We're going into that.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the second age, which is just like the age of, I don't know, peace. And then it's the age of
everybody.
I think it's
chill.
Just always been the age of the elves, too. And then the elves are like,
I mean,
gotta go.
The elves are like basically ageless, so it might as well be
the
age of the elves.
And then at the end of the third age, they're like, I think we're done here. And they leave.
Yeah. All right. So, Angela, do you have anything else you want to talk about right now, considering the intel we have at this current moment on Lord of the
Rings?
No, I don't
think we didn't really talk about the video, the trailer as much, but I think that it was kind of wrapped into what we were saying. fine.
And I think as well, if you didn't read the article and you watched it, you're like, oh, okay, interesting. I didn't get much context of it.
Exactly.
So again, really encourage you to read the article. We've done an
If you want some visual, beautiful visual stuff, then hit that trailer
and
up.
Some a fun glimpse at, like, you know, the I think the Harfoot stuff is nice. It's almost like very nymph-like.
Well, and that's like the end of the trailer is basically like a Harfoot hand holding somebody else's hand, and it's like, I think that's meant to reel you in, you Hobbit lovers.
That's exactly like, wait a minute, there's little hands in this?
Is
a
kid? Is that a Hobbit? I don't know.
How hairy are those hands? I gotta double check.
It's not their hands that are hairy, it's their feet.
Yeah, I know, but like, you never know. Body hair is a
floppy
is a son
hair,
of a
hairy feet.
So we'll see, you know, what other information comes out and what other coverage is being done of this show. At the very least, it's going to be covered on Post Show Recaps. We love our fantasy.
Darn tootin'.
So it's going to be probably some combination of like our resident fantasy podcasters here on the network, whether it be myself and Angela and Josh Wigler.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll
and
be the main people, but I'll be here. I'll be around.
There'll be a fellowship of us. And so I think we haven't exactly figured out the plan because, again, more than half a year out, but there'll be some sort of conglomerate of people coming together to talk about a show that I'm getting increasingly excited for. If you have any thoughts about the series, you can, of course, tweet at us. I'm at a Mike Bloom type. Angela is at Ange Pelagi, and we are at Post Show Recaps. As I mentioned before, if you're a member of the Post Show Recaps patron Discord at the $10 level, we got a sweet, sweet Lord of the Rings channel that, like Lembas bread, will fill you up with just a taste. We've got memes. We've got discourse now about details about the series. Surely more to come out over the next 7 months. Otherwise, Angela, I know you and I are wrapping up a couple of things on Post Show Recaps. We just watched the last few episodes of The X-Files Season 9. Probably going to talk about that at some point this week. We'll come back for The Witcher at some point in the next couple of weeks to wrap that up as well. If you are into fantasy and you haven't checked it out yet, there is stuff currently going on. The Legend of Vox Machina, which is an animated adaptation of a Critical Role, a hit online role-playing D&D game adventure show all wrapped up into one, has adapted its first arc into an adult animated series. Forget what we said about the PG aspect of The Rings of Power. This is full hard R, gore, violence, swearing, nudity, the lot. That is happening in that show, and myself and R. Philly are nearly done. We're at the final week of that. So figured, you know, you fantasy nerds out there might want to check it out if it is something that interests you. It's on the same streaming service, almost a network in Amazon Prime. So that's going to do it for this installment of our coverage of The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. Again, just wanted to kick off official coverage now that we have footage, sort of get the bug out there in everybody's ear as to what's happening with this, perk everybody's minds as to what we know so far. And I'm very excited to see what more we know when we finally come back September 2nd to watch it all unfold. Thank you all so much for listening. Angela, fantastic work as per usual.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. So thank you all so much for listening. Take care. Have a great day. Fly, you fools.